Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge, and who's that beautiful man standing in front of that red curtain over there? Is that John Mills?
Or it could be Killer Bob.
It could
be. You never know.
You know, honestly, I don't know who I'd prefer.
Oh, ow. Well, okay. No, fair point. He did have hair, so that's
he did. Well, that's true. That's something to aspire to.
And rocked that jean jacket like nobody's business.
So, we are on the edge, the cusp of a brand new season of Twin Peaks.
Yes.
This is insanity. And I am new to Twin Peaks, hence this episode. We're just going to be looking at Twin Peaks in general, which I have just watched the entire series for the first time. I'm going to be watching Fire Walk with me soon. And then Sunday night is season 3 premiere. This is crazy. Did you even think 25 years ago when season 2 came to a close that this was, I mean, was this even a glimmer in your eye as a fan?
Okay, I guess I'm old enough that I remember when they canceled shows, it meant the end. They didn't come back. There was no revival. There was no chance
that it would be picked up by ABC Family.
I think this whole thing, this whole trend, I'm going to point the finger at Cartoon Network because of them managing to accidentally resurrect Family Guy and then Futurama. I think that was really the spark that lit things on fire.
I think you're right. I actually think I would defy somebody to have a different example. I'm pretty sure you're right.
That's what jumps out at me.
But there you go. So we're here to talk all things Twin Peaks, and I'm very excited because I literally just finished the series today.
I watched the finale
just a few hours ago. But I mean, it's been something I've been meaning to get around to. So just to give you a brief history, my first exposure to David Lynch was in college. A good friend of mine, Matt, he was a huge David Lynch fan. He loved Twin Peaks. He loved all of this stuff. And he was just getting into a really big David Lynch kick. Like, he was so into it. And he came to visit me at school and was like, "Sean, when I'm visiting you, we have to watch this movie." And I was like, "What movie is that?" And he sits me down in my dorm room, which is, you know, not large. You know, we sit down, turn off all the lights, and he puts on Eraserhead. And it was an interesting experience. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. And just watching it in that dark, it was just, I thought it was so funny that he's like, "Yeah, I'll come visit you at college and we'll watch Eraserhead together in a dark room in the middle of the night. It's going to be great." And that about summed up my experience watching it, which was like, I'm in a dark room, I'm terrified, and I don't know what to feel. Have you seen Eraserhead?
I have not, actually. That is a big gaping hole in my David Lynch filmography study. But I would have to say that my first exposure, quote unquote, to him, I'm pretty sure I saw Dune before Twin Peaks. I'm pretty sure I did. It gets jumbled up. It's been enough years. But I mean, Twin Peaks was the first one that really made an impression because the theatrical cut of Dune was a little lacking. It was kind of like, yeah, okay. But especially when I was younger. But Twin Peaks, actually, this is the interesting thing, is Twin Peaks was the rage. But, you know, we were in the era before the internet. We were in the era before all of this stuff. And I knew of Twin Peaks and I knew of the Who Killed Laura Palmer rage. But I had not watched an episode before the second season premiere.
Okay.
I watched the second season premiere, and I love telling this story because I came into it, I had not watched any of the first season. I watched the second season premiere, and I watched it, and I remember watching it with my brother who was into the show, and I looked at him, and we're not going to spoil this. I looked at him, and I named the killer in that episode. And my brother looked at me and said, "No, that's impossible." And he gave his reasons for it. Mm-hmm. And then I went into it. I was like, okay, well, you know, big brother says impossible. And my friend Joey was big into it, so I wound up watching all of the first season and getting, you know, caught up on all of these things. And it was amazing because I wound up, you know, being proven right. But like it was such a weird way to watch the show. I mean, it's possible that I had because the thing is, Joey would have given everything to me on videotape, magnetic tape, kids. That's how we those did those things days. Back then. And Joey taped the show without commercials. God bless him. I became obsessed with the show. I became absolutely obsessed with the show, like big time. Couldn't stop talking. It was my Breaking Bad back then.
Yeah. I mean, it seems I was going to say I just paint the scene for me a little bit, because at that time, this is 90, 91. I was lucky if I was allowed to watch TV at all. Like, you know, it's like Twin Peaks. I have no memory of it. And I remember, like, you know, Next Generation was on. I remember watching that. Twin Peaks, I don't have any memory of it being on TV.
I mean, the thing is, it's the first show that I think was old enough to be aware of, you know, that connected mythology and I think that's really where Twin Peaks was like such a leap ahead, is you had episodic television that had cliffhangers, that had, you know, running story arcs, Sam and Diane and stuff like that, but it was really episodic, whereas Twin Peaks is the first show that I can remember at all that had like a connective mythology, where if you didn't watch the previous episode, you had no idea what was going on in the next episode.
Huh.
You know, they would have a recap, but keeping everything. I remember they did a mid-season, and the thing is, I'm going to amend my memory here. I must have watched something before the second season premiere. That was probably the first one I watched live. Probably okay. My friend Joey gave me the videotapes, and I got myself up to speed the week leading up or something like that, because I remember watching a thing hosted by Alan Thicke, where the two big shows on ABC that they were pimping out were Twin Peaks and Cop Rock.
And one of those shows is...
one of those shows lasted a little bit longer.
Is the one we should be talking about right. In this episode.
Cop Rock, look it up, everybody. Whoa.
That just sounds great.
No, imagine NYPD Blue, but they break into song.
Oh, I was hoping it was it was like a rock that they dressed up as a cop. They just put a cute little hat right. And badge on it.
The $6 million rock. Yeah. But Alan Thicke hosted the program, and he did this whole diagram of, now I feel like a fool because I must have watched that first, because he did this whole diagram where they put every character up that you knew up to that point, and they had these lines showing how everybody was connected. And it took him like 2.5 minutes to get through it. And then at the end, it was Alan Thicke was like, confused? Well, we'll take you through it. And it was, you know, it was crazy. It was crazy. It was the first one that I could really remember being a mythology thing that like you had to plug in. You were obsessed with it. People had I Killed Laura Palmer t-shirts.
Yeah.
You know, like it was big, man.
And it's insane. I can't believe, honestly... I feel like even nowadays, the show would have trouble on the air. Like it would struggle. It's amazing to me that this launched so strong out of the gate, because I don't think anybody thought it was going to. I don't think David Lynch did. I don't think Mark Frost did. Definitely the network did not. I was watching interviews where they were talking about how they had screened it and audiences respond. They were like, oh, they liked it more than we thought they would, but they didn't love it. So they were expecting it to kind of die a quick death. It is amazing to me that back then there was no precedent for it, and somehow it took off with such a bizarre angle.
If I recall, and I may be wrong about this, but if I recall correctly, it was a mid-season replacement, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
That's right.
So, so I think that's what caught them off guard, was they were like, yeah, sure, let's throw spaghetti at the wall. And it became the rage. And what's very interesting is, for a very long time, the only version of the series premiere you could get was the, I think it was Canadian or European version, whatever, where, and trust me, guys, this is not a spoiler, where you actually see them bust in and kill Killer Bob. It was done like its own self-contained movie.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've heard
that. And then the show continued. And I remember watching that, because it was the only thing you could get on tape, and just, you know, what is going... What? How do they keep going after this? But, you know, who knows?
Right.
You know?
I think they did that because they were like, we don't think this is going to. So just in case this really fails, this will have an ending to it. It'll be a self-contained thing. Maybe it'll do well in Sweden.
But vestiges of that scene that was cut out of the American premiere appear in the series when there's that hallucination, I believe in the dream sequence in the third one where Mike and Bob are talking to each other and Cooper is dreaming it.
Yeah.
Like that was originally from that cut part of the pilot. So yes, I was that obsessed with Twin Peaks, y'all. So
that's amazing. Yeah. I think it's great. I mean, so let's, full disclaimer, we're going to go complete spoiler mode now, as we discuss the series. So I, again, this is something I've been meaning to watch for a while. I was able to pick up the Blu-ray set, and I'll have to admit, so I started off with we started with the pilot, which I thought was really slow. Like, it moved very slowly for me. I wasn't enamored with it, but I was fascinated by it, and each and every episode I watched, I felt kind of the same way. I liked it a little bit more, but I was so just put off. Not in a bad way, but just by how bizarre it was, just kind of like, what am I watching?
Yeah.
And it's very leisurely. Like, it's paced, even for like modern day drama, like something like Breaking Bad, which is very thoughtfully paced.
Yeah.
Twin Peaks is very slow paced and it's very thoughtful and it takes its precious time getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where kind of like the Big Lebowski, not in terms of pacing, but the Big Lebowski, the first time I saw it, I hated it. And it was one of those things that as I go back and rewatch it and have come to appreciate it more and more, I realize you can't enjoy it fully until you're a fan of it, which is impossible the first time you see it because you don't know what to expect. I feel like Twin Peaks is kind of the same thing. And when I go back and rewatch it, I am interested to see how I react. But like I said, I wasn't enamored with it at first, but it was there was something just that pulled me in and just captivated me and kept me and Sarah going, and it kind of won us over as it went along through the first season.
I would say that Ray Wise was like I was a huge fan of his performance, and I loved Cooper, I loved the donut jokes, all of that stuff. And what was I would say for me the real hook was, again, this is a show that, like you said, it takes its time and it sort of like breaks rules.
Yeah.
But the direction that they did in so many episodes. There's one in specific where they're tracking down Leo's cabin and Into the Night is playing. And there's this one shot where they're just starting and all four of them come up and it's like a movie shot. And
yeah.
You know, keeping in mind that this is in the 4x3 days, they managed to make a cinematic shot out of a four. Now, yes, I know 4x3 was the original Academy, blah, 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 blah. But like, you know, we get letterboxed shows basically now. You know,
right.
And now, you know, that shot and the simple fact that it was them going through and there was this mood music that winds up, you know, being what's playing on the record. And like it was such an exercise in controlling the emotion and the mood of things that what's most amazing about the show to me is that it, regardless of the director, it really maintained that feel. Like there was a very strong artistic direction.
Yeah. And you know, it's hard to look at it from that perspective because now we have Twin Peaks was so influential and such a landmark. Literally every drama you watch in this day and age owes Twin Peaks something. Like every great, like Breaking Bad, True Detective, X-Files, you know, Lost, all you can go down a list, Mad Men, you know, all these things owe Twin Peaks a debt of gratitude. And part of me was wondering as I was watching it, and I was like, you know, I'm not bowled over by this, at least, you know, at the beginning. Part of me was just wondering, it was like, I wonder, just because I'm so spoiled, and I can't, for whatever reason, transport my mind back to that time where this was not normal on television.
Right. Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's... You know, there are so many things like, you know, you think about the white horse, right? When I was a kid, that was just a weird, like, I always think of The Simpsons making the great joke where, you know, they flash back and Homer's watching Twin Peaks and there's the rocking street light with the trees and a giant dancing with a horse and Homer going, wow, I have no idea what's going on. But the simple fact that when you come back at it as an adult and watch it, and, you know, because I watch it, you know, in high school, and then I rewatched it when the Blu-ray set first came out, and getting it this time. Oh, that's heroin. Gotcha. Riding the horse. Okay, there you go. He shot her up with heroin, and that's why, you know, she's nuts. And
yeah,
and it's so much stuff. And in the metaphor, really, like, it's almost, you know, and I hesitate to use this comparison, but it's almost like, almost like Looney Tunes. Like, it's not in terms of funny, but in terms of the fact that the parents laughed at jokes that the kids didn't get. And that's what I think really sets Twin Peaks apart, is you can come back to it and it works on a different level, like a whole separate level from what it was. And I mean, I was so nuts about the show that I saw Fire Walk With Me in the movie theater when it was released. I was late to work because of it too. I made a conscious decision to be late to work and tick off my bosses.
And were you happy with that decision, or should we come back to that?
We'll come back to that, except I will say that, you know, I'm going to be very interested to get your read on it, because I had one reaction back in the day, back when I was obsessed with the show. And then when the Blu-ray box set came out, the first thing I did before rewatching the show was I said, I want to watch Fire Walk With Me. I haven't watched it in years. I don't want a memory of the show fresh in my head. I just want to watch it. I had a completely different take on it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I will be very interested, because you're going to be coming into it hot off of seeing the season.
Yeah.
Very interested what your reaction is going to be.
It's also, and, you know, well, let's talk about season two and we'll get into this. I was going to say, it's also interesting because I'm going to be watching it from a completely different perspective of, I know there's more to come. Whereas season two, like you said, it was done. It was dead. And then you had this movie that came out that people were like, what is this? But
it was a prequel.
Yeah, it was a prequel. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like I said, season one of Twin Peaks, it took me a little bit to kind of get on board with it. By the finale, I was kind of, and I would tell people, I was like, I'm watching Twin Peaks. I don't love it, but it fascinates me, and can't stop watching it.
Yeah.
We got through season one. We kind of put it away for a little bit, and then we picked up season two. And a lot of what I've heard and a lot of what the consensus seems to be is season two is terrible. That for some reason people it's interesting that people say that, because I found a portion of season two to be pretty bad and a pain to watch. But
I can guess what part of it.
But I will say this. I read something about somebody saying it's better to look at it as three mini seasons. And sure. I think that's true. So the first 8 or 9 episodes, up until they solve the mystery of who killed Laura Palmer, that episode, once they solve that and that is concluded, from that point on, the show is bad.
Yep.
It has no direction.
Yep.
They have no clue where to take it to keep it going. And part of that, I think, was just, one, David Lynch did not want to solve the mystery of Laura Palmer, and the studio forced him to.
Yep.
And two, they expanded from 7 or 8 episodes to a full slate of 22 episodes, which is like, okay.
The biggest issue is Lynch didn't want to solve the murder. Some fans feel that that's Lynch sort of like rewriting history, but from my earliest memories, I can recall Lynch saying he wouldn't have solved it. Yeah. But both Frost and Lynch basically walked away, and they were like, you know what, we're producers, but okay. And the show kept going, and the cast knew it was going off the rails.
Yeah.
And they reached out to them and basically begged them to come back and say, you got to save this. This is all falling apart.
That's insane. It's so...
And you can see where they come back in and get involved again.
Yes.
And that's, you know,
well, that's what I was going to ask you. Sarah and I were watching season two, and watching, I use that term loosely. It was on in the background, and we would look up from our phones every so often and say, what's happening? Now, part of that was maybe we were on our phones, but part of that was also due to the fact that what's her name was now thinking she was 16 years old and had super strength and was tossing boys around in the wrestling.
That was great, right? That was, yeah, that was a good one. That was, I really enjoyed that. But you know, nothing captivates quite so much as James's dalliance with a married woman.
Yes.
Oh my Lord, that is that that is the definition of torturous. Watching that was painful.
And watching week to week. I mean, what was going through? So you guys have this show. It's great. And you guys are like, this is amazing. It's unique. There's nothing like it. What was it like to watch that happen and see it kind of devolve into this very dull, generic, just like everything else on television type show?
We were very conscious of what was happening, but we were trying to put as positive a spin on it as we could. Like, it was one of those things where it was like, they'll get it right next week. They'll get it right next week. And the thing is, this is another thing that's easy to forget or lose perspective on. Is back when it was on, you didn't have as many choices of what to watch, right? Yes, there was cable TV, but even then, cable TV was like, you know, two music channels and a bunch of stuff you didn't want to watch in QVC, and the network still. The network still reigned supreme. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't like you were suddenly going to jump ship and say, well, you know, I can go over to AMC or FX or FXX or TNT or TBS, blah, blah, blah. They didn't have that original programming to compete with things. And so the landscape was very, very different. And so even though it was despairingly bad, you put as positive a spin on it as you could. You'd be like, well, it'll be better next week. It was sort of like being a Bond fan and getting like Diamonds Are Forever. And you're like, well, next time. I mean, the whole thing where, oh my gosh, where Cooper is out of the force and he's
it's so funny you can pinpoint it as one, when they, after they solve Laura Palmer's murder, and two, when Cooper gets kicked off the force.
Oh, yeah.
And once he gets back on the force, when they are like, by the way, you're back on the force. He's like, great. From that point on, the show picks back up.
Yeah,
so
it sure does, doesn't it?
To that. But there are a couple things about that awful middle section I loved. First of all, David Lynch shows up as Gordon Cole, which is just a joy. Because David Lynch is just the goofiest human being. Which is shocking, considering his movies, but his
character. Think about that too. Like, what a unique set of characters that they bring. Cole, the mostly deaf FBI director, Cooper's boss, who shouts everything and doesn't hear what anybody says, but still gets the point. It's just such an amazing expressionist thing in a television show, especially that era.
Oh, absolutely. And I that was a joy. That kind of broke up the monotony. Also, David Duchovny, was amazing. And again, I can't believe they got that on television in the early 90s.
Well,
David Duchovny as a transgender or whatever.
Well, I mean, the way that it was back then was the way he explains it was that he had to dress as a woman to go undercover, and then he discovered that he just liked it, and he everything else, he was like, I just like wearing the clothes. There was nothing else about it. Like, he wasn't transitioning or anything. It was just a David Lynch sort of, you know, I just like wearing these clothes, and that's just why I'm going to do it. And the thing is, you can't give all of the credit to Lynch. You know. There's plenty of it that belongs to him, but Frost is such a driving force, a driving creative force behind this. You have to give due credit to Frost as well. I think even more so, like, Frost and Lynch together produce Twin Peaks.
Right. It's not a single, I mean, Lynch's fingerprints are all over it, but you're absolutely right. Like, and even he will say, like, it is completely a collaborative effort between myself and Mark Frost. And you can see that. I mean, there are touches here and there that aren't quite David Lynch, but there's a lot that is. But, you know, it is definitely those two minds working together created something just insane. And it was tough for a little while, and I was like, oh, man, I get why people really hate this season. Even David Lynch, in a recent interview, just flat out said season two sucks. And I think it's being a little harsh, because honestly, I thought those first eight or nine episodes were great. And then once they introduce Heather Graham's character introduce a love interest for Cooper, it starts to pick back up again. And then you have the Miss Twin Peaks pageant, and then that finale, which might be the best episode of the series thus far.
I am still obsessed with the song Under the Sycamore Trees. Like that, seriously, you want to freak yourself out, you know, it's fall and like, you know, the spirits are in the air or something.
Right.
Drive around on a backcountry road playing, you know, that song.
Oof.
That is a good mood song, man. That'll get you.
Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about, okay. So I knew the show picked back up at the end, and I was really, but I was still pleasantly surprised. I'm like, oh, this is starting to get good again. And then you have this killer episode, like one of the best hours of television I think ever, with this season two finale. I thought it was insane, and I've even to this day, like I was saying, even with season one I was a little like, okay, getting on board. I've never seen anything like that finale, I mean, except in a David Lynch movie, but like, my god, it was amazing. And I get the great pleasure of getting to watch the story continue immediately tomorrow. Yeah. You know, tonight it's Saturday night, so tomorrow night I'll get to see the beginning of season three. What was it like watching that episode? I mean, did you know? Did by that point did you know it was canceled?
Yep.
Oh,
you knew it was
god.
Over. It was June 10th, and it
what year? 1992.
Yeah, it was June 10th. Yeah, and we were all heartbroken. But there were rumors. There were rumors going around that what they were doing was they purposely ended it the way that they did because they wanted to shop it around to another network and say, okay, we've got it back together. We can make this work. Look, we've got a cliffhanger. And undoubtedly, ABC doesn't, you know, who knows how many different moving parts there
right.
are. But the word was that they very much had an interest in carrying the show on another network, and no other network bit. And for a very, very long time, people, you know, would entertain the notion of a revival. Fire Walk With Me kind of killed that. And they, for year, it basically just faded. And I would say that the one thing that is sort of comparable in the modern era is Firefly, where, you know, there was a beloved show. Yeah, I mean, Twin Peaks was different because it actually found an audience.
Mm-hmm.
But after it was canceled, there were those of us who carried the torch, who kept the dream alive of maybe, sure, maybe, maybe they could bring it back. And then we would spend years talking about, oh, well, gosh, that was a great show, wasn't it? And comparing everything to Twin Peaks and highlighting what Twin Peaks did to forge the path and everything like that. But we gave up, you know. And but I remember that. I remember seeing that finale, and I probably called Joey. I've mentioned him several times, but I probably called him. I was like, oh, my gosh, can you believe that? And yeah, it was like, wow, man.
I think it's
so heartbreaking.
So it's so bizarre that Laura says to him, I'll see you again in 25 years.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's like, Sarah turned to me and was like, what?
I know.
It's 25. What? Did they know? And I was like,
they did not.
I'm sure. Of course they did. Why not?
There was 0% chance that they knew.
I think that was one of those things where David Lynch realized, like, wait, it is going to be 25 years. Or let me say it like him because I love his voice. It's going to be 25 years since Twin Peaks ended, and we've got to do another one. But I think that's so crazy. But, man, yeah. I mean, I thought that finale was great, and I get to miss the boat as far as the frustration goes, since I know there's going to be more.
I will say that there is some trepidation on the part of fans, long-standing fans. I know people who are nervous about it coming back. You know, let sleeping dogs lie. We love what came before. There's no need to bring it back and potentially sully the memory. I'm of the opinion of I'm overjoyed about it, but I'm keeping my expectations in check. Because the one thing that I'm fairly convinced of is that this coming season is going to be an alternate timeline. is that we're going to find out that Cooper is living a life that where things went differently, where he is somewhere else, but not knowing that he's somewhere else. And part of that ties into Fire Walk with Me.
Okay.
So I'll let you see that first before I discuss my theory with you.
Yeah. So I, you know, I'm obviously I'm excited because to me it's like, great. I can't wait to watch more. I really enjoyed watching it. I'm excited because I'm on a David Lynch kick right now. I just rewatched Eraserhead for the first time since I saw it in college. I just rewatched Mulholland Drive. I've been reading and watching a lot of David Lynch, just getting very pumped up about it. And I'm just excited from a standpoint of taking expectations of the show out of it. It's exciting to me that it's like, this is the first thing David Lynch has done cinematically since Inland Empire in what, 2006? Is that when that came out?
I didn't see it, but yeah, I guess. So that
it's been,
right.
I mean, it's been about a decade. So this is, and he wrote, I think he co-wrote it with Mark Frost every episode,
yeah, Frost
but he's directing every episode, 18 episodes, 18 hours of David Lynch, which he has said, this is an 18-hour movie that we're splitting up into parts. That's exciting to me. It's exciting to think that David Lynch is coming back to make something. It's exciting that he's excited about it. As far as a Twin Peaks fan, because I don't have to wait all and build up that anticipation, I feel like I'm a little bit more gung-ho and a little less hesitant. I'm a little less nervous about it.
Well, I'm completely conscious of the fact that there's a lot of nostalgia that plays into it, but I'm all systems go, you know, mega thrusters are go. I am, you know, like you point out, I'm jacked by the idea that Frost and Lynch, the band got back together. This is television wise. This is like the Beatles getting back together for me. This is like, I loved what you guys did before. Can't wait.
A Tribe Called Quest got back together to record one last album. Twin Peaks is, I mean, it's Christmas, Theo. It's the time for miracles. at this point, I mean, if you are a Missing Frames fan, you're probably wondering, like, why is it just talking about Twin Peaks? What isn't there, like, are you going to watch something? So, yes, if you haven't picked up already, I have not seen Fire Walk with Me, and I will be watching that. And we're also going to be watching the premiere of season 3, and we're going to reunite to talk about that as well. We're going to do both of those things. So let's talk a little bit about Fire Walk with Me. I have heard things from fans that are all over the map, I remember back when my friend Matt, who introduced me to David Lynch, was talking about how great Twin Peaks was, and then they made this movie and you thought, oh, they're going to wrap everything up and it's going to explain everything. Oh, it's a prequel and now I'm even more confused. What is going on?
I don't know if I was more confused as I was. I see, the thing is, you haven't seen it, so I don't want to color your expectation for it.
I know the general premise of what it's about.
All I will say is, as a diehard fan watching a Twin Peaks movie, coming out of it, my reaction was not terribly positive.
Back to that experience of you seeing it. The show's just been canceled, and then Lynch is like, oh, don't worry, I've made a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you go to see it. So, I mean, yeah. What was that like, and what was it about it, without getting too spoilery, that just did not work for you?
The connective tissue was not really there. In terms of tying the plot together, the big mystery of the show is completely ruined. If you watch Fire Walk with Me before you watch, there's no suspense to the show. And that's one of the things that makes the show really, really work. The first time you watch it is that suspense. Oh my gosh, what's going on? Who is it? Who did it?
Yeah.
And so it works against the show in that sense. And on top of that, there were, let's just say, I mean, you know, this isn't a concern for you, but don't watch it with your parents or your grandparents in the room with you, because you go and you're like, oh, well, I watched Twin Peaks. Oh my goodness. Like, it's, you know, yeah, you know, I, and you know, there's a different Donna in it. Moira Kelly plays her, and so it's
okay.
That's a little bit jarring as well, because you're Laura Flynn Boyle apparently was just so difficult to work with that they were like, we're just recasting.
I don't know if you've looked up recent photos of her, but I hope she's okay. I really do.
You know,
I hope her life is doing okay.
As a minor spoiler for you, she actually influenced the direction of the relationship between Agent Cooper and Audrey, because she wound up dating Kyle MacLachlan.
Okay.
And she was not comfortable with where they wanted to take the plot line with Audrey and Cooper, and exercised some influence. This is all, I wasn't in the room, but this is sort of like accepted fan rumor fact,
right,
sort of thing. And apparently flexed some muscle, and they bowed to her wishes. And that's why Cooper and Audrey seem to be on a collision course for a while, and then all of a sudden they split apart.
Boom. Yeah, that's true. That kind of fell off the radar.
Yep.
So my friend Matt, he said the one thing that really bothered me, or what bothered him about Fire Walk With Me, was like Twin Peaks is very quirky. There's a lot of humor to it. And he was like, I don't know why, but it just felt like David Lynch forgot that. And it's just this very dark, very depressing movie. I mean, it was booed when it premiered. I think it was at Cannes when it premiered there. Tarantino flat out said, like, I will never watch another David Lynch movie. I hate him. This is terrible. And, I was such a huge fan, and that ruined everything. I mean, this is such a divisive movie. And of course, now people are coming back and writing thought pieces about why Fire Walk With Me is actually his masterpiece. And of course,
I mean, masterpiece isn't necessarily something I would throw at it. But I will say, again, I had a very different reaction to it years later. With some distance between the show and myself.
Sure. So when you rewatched it, you didn't know about the revival. Do you think, I mean, the revival, kind of in the same way that the Force Awakens allowed people to go back and say, hey, the prequels are okay. We can like those now. Do you think this thing with Fire Walk With Me is similar, where it's like, now that people are, we're not looking at it as like, this is the only thing we have, and we have this revival? What do you think?
No, I don't think that. I don't think that people are reevaluating it based on that. I think that, in all honesty, it was, if your only real exposure to Lynch by that point was Twin Peaks, then Fire Walk With Me very much takes you off guard, because Fire Walk With Me finds him much more in his cinematic comfort zone, watching things like Blue Velvet.
Yeah.
Seriously, it's much more in that vein than a TV show, which has, which was sanitized for television, got a lot of stuff through because of metaphor, but and stuff that's very graphic, but because it was blunted in a certain way, like, you have to be, watch it with, fresh eyes to be like, oh, I get what they're saying here. Because the whole series is about something that is not something you typically talk about,
right,
on television. But because they remove it and introduce these metaphorical characters that, remove the decision-making process from the people who are, blah, 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 blah. Like, it's all a complicated mess. But, like, what the show is about is what the movie is about. But the movie is much more explicit about what it's about. I know that that's a really oblique way, but I definitely want people to watch the show.
I know what you're saying, and I, like I said, I know kind of what it focuses on and what its topics, the fun topics that it'll be looking into. I'm looking forward to watching it bright and early on a Sunday morning,
It'll be interesting with season 3 as well, because they will be on Showtime. It's different rules nowadays, man. And are they going to, I always point to the example of South Park when they had the movie Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it, because I think that Parker and Stone work much better with certain limitations placed on them.
Yeah.
And I would say that the only real fear, quote unquote, I have about the show is that if they remove those limitations, then the creativity goes with it, because part of what made Twin Peaks so special, so wonderful, was they found a way to work this in and discuss it within the, you know, like it, discuss it in such a way that it could make it past the censors, and they didn't understand what they were allowing on air because they were only looking at the surface value of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, and you see it in television, and it's why television has become the new, like, the go-to art form for the visual medium, where, you know, film is still churning out good stuff, but a lot of people are looking at TV as the prime example now, because I think the limitations of budget, of resources, force writers and directors and actors to get more creative. They have to think more outside the box with their limitations, which causes amazing things to happen. Things that a production with $200 million would never even dream of doing, because they are like, they snap their fingers and they get whatever they want. Yeah. And then you have something like Breaking Bad, which is far more compelling than 99% of what's coming out in the movies.
Yeah.
And I get exactly what you're saying. And I know I've read an interview with David Lynch where I think they were asking him as much, like, oh, are you going to get really crazy? And he was, his response was encouraging, because he basically said, no, you know, it's not about that. He's like, if the story dictates that, we'll go there. But we're not, I'm not going to Showtime and being like, let's see how far I can push them. He's like, that's not the agenda here. Which is,
awesome.
Like I said, definitely encouraging. But okay, great. Well, this is awesome. I'm glad we got to discuss it. I'm very excited to watch Fire Walk with Me. To kind of, you know, I mean, I know I'm probably going to regret saying that, but I am very fascinated to see, especially because Lynch said specifically it's very important to watch that in regards to what is going to be happening.
Which sort of confirms what I think. Yeah, I really confirm. I think that confirms what I think about season three.
Okay. And we'll also be watching the premiere of season three before we reunite to discuss. So we'll get to discuss, and you can go full on and talk about it. And the good people at home, it'll be instantaneous. You won't know any time passed at all. That's the magic of David Lynch. So what are you hoping for out of season three? I mean, at its core, what will make this work for you?
Tone. I just want it to match the tone of when Twin Peaks was working. I don't have any expectation for the plot. I have things that I think might happen. I have things that I think might not happen. But I just want, I want tone. I want the feel back. That's all I care about, is I want the feel. I want to sit down and I want to feel like this is a show I can soak in that, you know, to cite a point that you made, you know, takes its time and those sorts of things. And, you know, that's all I'm looking for. What are you looking for?
I mean, I agree. I think you're completely right. I think the right balance of tone, and it's always concerning when something like this comes back, when Star Wars comes back, when the X-Files comes back. X-Files is a bad example because that was probably
let's never speak of that
away.
Again. Yeah.
I'm encouraged because it's David Lynch. And you know that even though Twin Peaks is now entering a world that is now saturated by the path it plowed, with dramas that can go in any which direction and do any level of creativity they want, it's still not David Lynch. And David Lynch is a singular visionary filmmaker.
Yep.
And the fact that he is so heavenly involved.
He is heavenly.
Heavenly and heavily involved with this new series. That's very exciting to me. So I'm hoping, even if it doesn't capture lightning in a bottle, we're going to be getting something very unique. And I'm hoping it's a worthy follow-up and a worthy entry in his filmography.
Yeah.
So we'll go ahead and wrap this up, and we will be returning to discuss Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me and the brand new season of Twin Peaks. So stay tuned, folks.
Now available to own on video cassette. We'll be right back.
And we're back, and we are feeling very fired and walked with Mead. We're fired and walked.
I'm pretty
with
sure
Mead.
That's a grammatical nightmare that just happened right there.
Speaking of nightmares, fire walk with me. Mm-hmm. So, I was bracing myself emotionally for this, and I was kind of prepping Sarah as well, based on our conversation, based on conversations I've had with other people. And it's been a couple days since I watched it now. We kind of, you know, when you and I last spoke, I just finished the series, Twin Peaks. And it was a weekend of Twin Peaks. We really had to rush through and get through all of them to be able to watch the premiere of season three. And Fire Walk With Me came bright and early on Sunday morning.
Always a good way to start a Sunday.
It really is. So let's just get right into it. Fire Walk With Me is, I think I benefit a lot from, first of all, knowing that this is not the end. That definitely came into play. This, you know, it was, I was excited to watch it, and I was able to go into it with kind of that sort of open mind. It was not probably what you experience, where it's like, great, we're going to get answers to questions, and what am I watching?
Yeah, back when it came out, seeing it in the movie theater, that was an experience, because first and foremost, it was, I think, way more graphic than I was expecting, especially sexually.
You did, and you saw it by yourself. You did not.
No,
see it with,
I saw it. I saw it with two friends, and we all three of us at the end of it were kind of like, "What just happened?" You know, it was sort of like, and the thing is, I was being, you know, Mr. Positive. I was like trying to hold on. I was like, no, just look for the good stuff, guys. And I just eventually, over time, you just sort of give up.
Yeah.
And it was, so that was my reaction at the time, was just sort of like bafflement, not understanding what happened.
Yeah, that was, I sound very negative right now. I liked it. I enjoyed it. In whatever the loosest sense of the word, I use the word enjoy. I did like it. I admired it. And I find myself, as I think about it more and more, very moved by the story he chose to tell. The movie is extremely dark and depressing. And my initial reaction, which I actually texted you, and you were like, don't you text me, we're going to talk about this.
Yes.
But my initial reaction was like, well, what was the point? Like, what was the point? We knew Laura Palmer had her issues. We knew she probably had a very tragic end. And so part of me, my first immediate reaction was like, did we really need to see that?
That's a good question. It really is. I would say that basically Fire Walk With Me operates in a space that is just more explicit than, like, the whole metaphor of Twin Peaks works, and it gets by the censors. Like we said at the first part of the show, like, gets by the censors because it's a metaphor,
right?
Killer Bob is a metaphor for the evil that lurks in men's hearts and that sort of thing. But this was much more literal, and there are some very jarring things in it. The one thing I would say is that it, over time, I've come to accept it as possibly necessary, because it's sort of like, and I know people will roll their eyes and everything, but it's sort of like, I remember one of the big questions back when Revenge of the Sith came out was, people were like, he killed kids and his wife. How can you... It's because over time, people lose sight of the horror of what happened, and they become fixated on sort of the intrigue.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in order for the redemption of Darth Vader to mean anything, there had to be, true monstrosity, because he'd become sort of an anti-hero over time.
Right.
Likewise, with Laura Palmer's story, her tragedy was sort of an abstract, because the show was all focused on solving the murder.
Yeah, she was just the MacGuffin of the television show. So the more I thought about it, the more it started to feel necessary. We take something that was a MacGuffin, that was just the inciting incident of the series, and turn it into a full, like, a human being. And
And I think that viewing order, even though this is quote unquote a prequel, viewing order, this has to be viewed after the show for that reason.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the whole show is about peeling the onion. It's sort of like Blue Velvet in slow motion, where it's getting to the layers underneath the idyllic front that you see when you go to the small town. And Lynch, you know, Blue Velvet was all about Lynch digging into what's underneath everything and the horror that is there. And Twin Peaks is the same thing, where it's about peeling apart the lair and how messed up everybody really is, even when it looks wonderful on the outside.
Yeah.
First glance, Twin Peaks looks like an idyllic town, and then you spend two seasons finding out that it's the most screwed up place on earth.
Yeah, and it's true.
Yeah, and then Fire Walk With Me, I think, should be viewed after. It shouldn't function as I'm going to watch this before the show, because it really is the capper. It's sort of like the series is like a prep for the film. Now, the thing is, it's very hard to defend Fire Walk With Me, and I know that there are likely people who have seen it that are like tearing their hair out right now. It's like, oh, you're trying to... But in all honesty, when the Blu-ray set came out, I rewatched it on purpose before the series... Before I went back to the series to give distance, and I'm telling you, it's a different experience, because when you allow it to exist on its own terms, divorced from the show, it is an incredibly moving work.
It is.
It really
and
is.
It is maybe out of everything I've seen from Lynch, and I think everything he does is very personal to him, and as abstract as even something like Eraserhead, it feels like a personal film. But this feels very raw and moving in a way that, at least I haven't seen all his movies, but it's the most raw I think I've seen him. And I think what's necessary about it and is like absolutely, it's absolutely required viewing for any fan of Twin Peaks or anyone interested in just this series. It's almost the redemption of Laura Palmer. We know Laura was troubled. She had issues. She was kind of running around town with all these different guys. And this movie offers up that she may have been a victim, but she fought to overcome that. And not only that, but she fought to save her friend, to save Donna, to save essentially the entire town. She takes it. She basically you could look at it as a sacrifice. She is sacrificing herself to, you know, she sacrifices herself to save the town from Bob or whatever however you want to look at that ending.
Sure.
That's an interpretation I heard that I agree with. And in that regard, she's a tragic figure. So the movie is extremely depressing, no matter what way you look at it. It kind of starts off, I mean, the first 30 minutes is kind of weird, quirky Twin Peaks for in like a almost a Black Mirror type situation where they're I can't remember the name of the town, but it's basically the opposite, the evil twin of Twin Peaks.
Right. You know, it is it's interesting because I do think that is going to come into play, you know, now that the new series has started. But I think really Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, the thing that really makes it stand on its own, in my view, is that Lynch builds a very abstract and complex mythology about the Black Lodge. He becomes in the movie much more focused on the Black Lodge than reality. That's more interesting to him.
Yeah.
And it was more interesting to me, too, because I like that sort of like abstract, quirky, weird.
I feel the same way.
Mythos.
Like, I went back and rewatched the pilot of Twin Peaks, and it struck me what it was that didn't capture my attention the first time around, and it's that I wanted it to be weirder. And the pilot, it's got its quirks, and it's not like it's just a straightforward detective story, but it's not like the finale, or I mean, it's no longer the finale, but the finale of season two. That's kind of what I wanted from the series, and the pilot is very much unsettling, but it's almost straightforward. And I realized, like, you know, I'm right there with you. I want the surreal. I want the weirdness that comes with the Black Lodge. Like, I want that.
Yeah, and the whole thing that he goes into with, you know, I am the arm, and wait, what? So that's the spirit of Mike's missing. What? And like, so you can understand why a teenager who, you know, like, I came, oh, I got to watch it. It's 10 o'clock at night. It's time for Twin Peaks to be on, and this cliffhanger and everything. And you go into the movie theater, and it's like, wait, the dancing man's an arm? What?
Hold on a sec. Yeah, what is happening?
Yeah.
But, yeah. So,
yeah. You know, but the thing is that I really think also Fire Walk With Me, and I do have to give credit. There were a couple of people on Twitter pointing things out.
Like
when the premiere aired, or just before it aired, somebody pointed out, and somebody I know retweeted, I don't remember who, but they were like, according to my Twitter timeline, more people have seen Fire Walk With Me in the last 24 hours than the entire time it was in the theater. And I was like, yeah, that sounds right.
The sad.
Suddenly everybody's talking about Fire Walk With Me.
It's the truth. Well, yeah, I mean, I think we talked a little bit about it pre-show, where now there's this whole thing of like, Fire Walk With Me is the masterpiece that we've never understood until this point. And I do think that's funny, but I think it's great that it can be revisited, because I think it's a movie that is, and for fans of Twin Peaks who are still kind of dismissing it, I think it does deserve a rewatch. And I think part of why people are dismissing it again is because of the expectation. I think its release happening so soon after season two, or after the series being canceled, was a mistake. It was just bad timing. And
I think it was also a mistake not to have Mark Frost involved. He would have made sure more connective tissue was there. But what's interesting is, did you watch the cutscenes?
No, the missing pieces. I need to watch
those.
That's
the thing. You have to watch the missing pieces, because
isn't it? It's all the Twin Peaks, like the townspeople.
Yeah. Like basically all of the cut stuff, you sit there and it's a separate Twin Peaks movie.
Like, that's so crazy.
It's the Twin Peaks movie you were expecting.
But also,
basically,
isn't there some stuff that like kind of fleshes out Laura's family relationship? Like it's not all grim and depressing and horrible.
Well, I don't want to. No, it's still grim and depressing. Okay. But I don't want to spoil anything about it. But there is a very specific scene that speaks to, you know, and this is something that comes up in the show too. You know, but at her funeral, when Bobby Briggs like loses his mind and he's like, you all knew, you all saw her. And in the movie, in the cut scenes, there is at least one scene, a few more too, probably. But there's one that jumps out with the Haywards, where there's a lot of nonverbal communication where people are sort of like understanding, like you can tell that they don't know what to do. They know that something's wrong in Laura's life, and they know that, you know, and like sort of that awkward. I mean, it's that whole thing about the lie of the small town where everybody's in each other's business. I mean, the way it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays with the internet and everything, things have changed a great deal where everybody's up in each other's business in a different way, in a global way. But it used to be, you know, oh, that's the quirky house. Oh, that's, don't go, you know, don't go hang over there, kids. That, you know, Mr. Smith is a nice guy, but stay in our yard. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and it's, so they're definitely, the missing pieces are fascinating. They really are fascinating, because you will watch
I gotta check those out.
Yeah. And you will say that this is, I mean, if he had kept it in there, it would have been, gosh, I think it works out to like a whole other like hour and a half.
Yeah, and the movie's already pretty, it's like two hours and 15 minutes. It's a long movie.
What's really fascinating about it is the fact that he had the same problem with Dune. And I think that's why Mark Frost winds up being so important with Twin Peaks, is because Lynch will, in his brain, he's just making, the movie will be as long as I need to.
Yeah.
And then it seems he gets to the editing room and he's like, oh, nuts. I can't have a 15-year movie. I got to cut it down.
That's right. It's either going to be another long episode of Twin Peaks, or it's going to be this really dark, depressing story. And the two tones don't mesh. Like, it had to be, you couldn't have put those together. They had to be their own separate entities. You know, obviously, Fire Walk With Me focuses on Laura Palmer. So Cheryl Lee gets a chance to kind of shine in a way that shocks me. Like, it's an incredible performance, and it's amazing that she didn't do anything else really. Like that, I wonder if this movie like put a, like just a curse on her. Like, could people just not separate her from Laura Palmer?
If I recall correctly, I think she elected to leave the business because she wanted to have a family.
Oh, wow. Well, kudos to her.
There is an interview with her on the Missing Pieces disc of the Blu-ray set. And it's just her sitting in her backyard, chilling out in the trees and everything. She seems like a really nice person based on the interview, because like, she's very, you know, I don't recall whether she cites the movie as being, what broke her or broke her career or whatever, but she very much seemed like she was like, I didn't really want to be here anymore.
The stuff she went through, and I mean, it's a performance, but like, man, like the scene where Leland is just like, you need to wash your hands, and is like squeezing her cheek, and she, the look on her face is so real. And like her reaction when she sees him walk out of the house, when she's like crawled over to the bushes and is like, it's just like, it's an over, I mean, the movie is her performance, like in the same way that like There Will Be Blood is Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, it's like, it's a tour de force, and she holds the movie. I mean, she's captivating, and it's insane to me. It's just amazing that this movie faded so quick, like it just disappeared, and I'm happy that it's getting some more traction now. Like you said, I think that's absolutely true that more people have seen it in the past 24 hours than ever.
Which is, you know, and the thing is, I think that maybe audiences are just in a different headspace now. Like we all sort of, I think watching Fire Walk with Me after Lynch's later works like Lost Highway, I think you're a little bit more prepared for where Lynch really is.
Yeah.
You know, like Blue Velvet is very weird, but it still has something of a very cohesive structure. He got less and less structured as he went forward. And I think that Fire Walk With Me is just on the cusp of him walking away and fully embracing the expressionist absurdist school of film. And what's interesting is I got to know now, as we're talking about it and talking about his evolution, with the first two episodes that have come out of Twin Peaks, The Return, where do you see Lynch? Where do you see Fire Walk With Me with regards to this? Like, I want to get your take. We have not talked about it yet.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's go right into the first two episodes of the Twin Peaks, The Return, whatever you want to call it. Season 3, The Revival, whatever.
The Revenge.
The Revenge.
Yes.
I loved the first two episodes.
I'm so relieved to hear that. I really am so relieved to hear that.
Well, I'm relieved that you're relieved, because that's a good sign. I adored every second of it. Like I was completely on board. And you know, I think part of it, again, I don't have the weight of 25 years of building anticipation. Like it kind of reminds me of when I watched Lost. The series was done, and I was able to sit down and watch it basically just all the way through. And there was never a point where I started to say, oh, this is stupid, I don't like the direction this is going in, oh, now it's this, oh, now it's that. To me, I was like, oh, this is just the story. This is what it is. That's kind of how I feel about this. I think some reactions, I saw one reaction that was like, that was the worst 3 hours of television I've ever seen, and I watched the inauguration of Donald Trump. You know, like, of course. But I love that, and I love that it's polarizing, and but more than anything, I'm happy that I enjoyed it, and it's definitely very Lynch. I mean, it's very going into that very dark, surreal, visually intriguing and disturbing realm, but it has his humor, and it has Mark Frost's humanity. Like, you know, everything is it feels very Twin Peaks, even though the majority of these first 2 hours don't really take place in Twin Peaks at all.
They don't. And I think that the first 2 hours, the way I read them was, this was just the reestablishing the world as it's changed since Cooper disappeared, basically. Yeah. And I know I spoke with my friend Joey, who I've talked about earlier, you know, through this episode and everything. Yeah. He was a diehard fan with me back in the original days and everything. And what he didn't like was he didn't like all of the locked shots. Whereas for
He mentioned that to me as well, actually, which I thought was I thought that was an interesting complaint. Like, he said, I wish it had been more exciting. And I thought that was hysterical, because frankly, I don't think Twin Peaks, the original series, was all that exciting. It was a very slow paced, very methodical. That was very locked camera, shots played out, not a lot of action and not a lot of showy cinematography. So it was interesting that that was the complaint.
Well, the thing is, though, Twin Peaks, the original series had more than one director. So there were directors that were more willing to do close ups and pans and zooms and tracking shots and stuff like that. When Lynch directed shows, I mean, the thing is, if you pluck out the Lynch shows, you're absolutely right. There were a lot more locked shots in his episodes, With this, I don't know, Lynch seems to operate visually on a frequency that just really works for me, because with those long takes, with the shot sitting there with just the noise, no music, sitting there, I think you're going to go one of two ways. And neither way is invalid. It's just the way people are wired. You're either going to say, oh, this is taking forever, could we move it along? Whereas I sit there and I don't know what he does, like how he composes things. And, you know, that doesn't take anything away from the cinematographer working with him, but this is Lynch's show. You know? But he sits there and I become obsessed because the camera's locked and I'm sitting there, I'm staring at it. And I'm like, what am I missing?
Oh my God.
There's
I know.
Something yeah. here he wants me to see and I just don't see it. Is it about where the lights are? Is it about how the cameras are balanced? Is it about what's going on?
And it's not just that, but it's the mystery. This kid is sitting on a couch staring at a glass box. What is this glass box? Why are they filming it? Where is he? So you're asking yourself questions in your head. You're like you said, you're trying to figure out, like, what do you want me to understand here? Do you even want me to understand anything? Like, is this just what it is? And then for me, at least, it's like you said, the tones, like the room tones, the sound of a light buzzing, the sound of the machinery, and that feeling that something bad is going to happen, which I think right. Lynch is, he is a master of making me like cringe, because when the camera does move, it's moving in a direction you do not want to go. It's going down right. a dark hallway. It's opening a door into a room and you know something's right there waiting for, you know, he has that way about him. So everything has this undercurrent of something bad is, there's something sinister at work here.
Yes.
And again, we're going to full spoiler mode here. So if you haven't seen the show at this point, the new show, please tune out and watch it. But
listen to us at chipmunk speed.
Yeah, please do. Yeah it's that much better. It's yeah. it's great. but like when the payoff to that glass box is amazing, and I lost it. It was terrifying in every possible sense, and then it was horrific in a way the show was never really capable of doing because it was network television. But man,
you know, there was, you know, before we broke to watch the show, like, I remember my concern was that it was going to be too graphic, that Lynch wasn't going to feel restrained, and there was, like, he skirted that line, man. Like, he was okay, because I'll use American Gods as an example. I watched the first episode of American Gods, and that was way too graphic for my tastes.
Right.
I'm not a prude. I'm not telling anybody not to watch it. I actually, because I saw somebody actually make a comment that you had to be a quote prude or a fundy not to love the American Gods pilot. And I was like, well, I'm neither one, and didn't dig it.
I'm but both, and I didn't like it for completely for reasons unrelated to me being both of those things.
But it was. Did you see the American Gods premiere?
I did, yeah.
This skirted that line. It was right there, but it kept me in it. I was like, okay, all right. It's sort of like he pushed the boundary a little bit, and he's like, I'm not going to break it.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, thank you, sir.
I mean, it's shocking, and it happens very quickly, to the point where you almost can't tell what's going on. But, you know, then you have moments like... it's very quick moments of violence. Like, you have the woman's head in the bed with the man's body. You have him going after what's Matthew Lillard, Scooby-Doo, Shaggy, his wife, and then shooting her in like a brutal like headshot. And then, you know, again, he shoots the woman who's traveling with him, who's trying to
Daria,
or like, yeah, she's basically trying to not one up him, but pull a fast one on him. But the violence, again, there's such a thing as tasteful violence, and it's more shocking when it's not in your face all the time, when you have brief moments.
I think that that's where the stuff like the locked shots pays off. I think that's where it pays off is, it's sort of like the violence in Taxi Driver. The camera, the storyteller is dispassionate about what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when you have, whether it's a slasher movie or a thriller or something like that, they move the camera, they get in close, they really torture you with what's going on, and, you know, like the Saw movies and stuff like that. Whereas this, the camera is simply there. It's almost like a documentary style. the camera is dispassionate about what's happening, and it allows you to view it without without personal horror.
Right.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense. But like, man, even without like the brief spurts of graphic violence, Lynch knows how to give me nightmares. I mean, that the guy sitting in the guy completely black, like just pitch black, sitting in the cell a few cells down from Shaggy.
Yeah.
I'm just going to call him Shaggy.
Do it.
But that it took me a moment to understand what was happening. And then when I realized like the guy's sitting there with his eyes wide open, I'm like, no, stop it. And then, of course, he disappears and his head floats away. And it's like, this is just insane.
Well, the first reveal shot, you know, you got the headlights going down and you're like, where am I going? What's going on? Where is this? What's happening in the music? What's driving this and everything? And then when, you know, let's just call him Evil Cooper, gets out of the car.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, the hair.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what that hair means. Oh, no.
And where can I get that hair?
Well, I'm looking more for the snakeskin shirt, man. That's styling stuff. But it, you know, and again, Lynch just does so much with such little dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, like you get what's happening. I don't know what he does to get such subtle performances out of his actors. But I mean, Kyle MacLachlan's been his muse since Dune. You know? And so they've been working together and he always gets the just amazing performances out of MacLachlan.
Oh, I know.
But then you've got to also wonder, and I think that, you know, that there's something about this too, that directors sometimes work with the same actors because those actors know how to bring a certain energy or ideas or something to the set that brings the best out of him.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's part of what was missing from Fire Walk With Me for a lot of people, was it wasn't Cooper's story anymore.
Yeah.
And Kyle MacLachlan really brings an energy with Lynch that
absolutely
is necessary for these things.
He does. And it's the energy. It's the shining beacon of like a good soul in the midst of all this darkness that you kind of need. He's the good guy, and you miss that when he's not around.
He's the Clark Kent character.
Yeah.
He's the person where you look at him and you say, boy, you got some really antiquated ideas about how the world should work. But then you realize, but man, you're a decent guy.
Yeah. And it's good.
I want you on my side.
Exactly. And you can rely on him. He makes you feel safe. And I think it's very interesting that Lynch is taking his precious time. I mean, will Cooper ever get out of the Black Lodge? We don't know.
That was such an amazing scene. And to, again, full spoiler mode, to turn the dancing man into a tree with, I mean, a talking lump of flesh at the top.
Yep.
You okay?
And then he went into crazy nightmare tree mode.
Well, doppelganger tree.
Yes. And chased.
We gotta watch out for those doppelgangers.
Chased poor Agent Cooper, who's on the verge of getting out down into the pits of hell, into outer space, like
water.
Maybe it's just water. It's Water Walk With Me. That's gonna be the new prequel film.
They doused Cooper. Well, this is the thing that I'm still with. Now, granted, only the first 2 hours have come out. So if anybody has seen beyond the first 2 hours and I'm wrong, okay, I'll deal with it later. But one of the lines from the original Twin Peaks that stuck with me and that I've continued to talk about is one chance out between two worlds. In the context of the show was always Bob had one chance out between the Black Lodge and reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, because of the scene where Cooper looks out through the curtain at Evil Cooper before he goes into the water,
mm-hmm.
Is it one chance out between two realities? There are two realities that you can go into.
Mm-hmm.
And one, you know, but at the same time, you have Evil Cooper. Like, there's so much just weird complexity to everything that's going on. This, I think that the reason I love the first 2 hours so much is because as much as it's taking its time, I very much got the sense that they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Which, with the original Twin Peaks, once they solved the murder, you saw all the wheels come off.
Yeah.
I get the sense with this, even if I hit an episode that I don't like,
yep,
they have a plan, and I'm good with it.
Yeah, there's a sense that we're going somewhere, and we don't know if that somewhere is going to ultimately be satisfying as a conclusion or whatever it ends up being, but there is a sense that there is, that something's happening. Something is, we're going somewhere, and the fact that Lynch is directing it, that he and Mark Frost wrote it all together, is extremely encouraging because it means that they had a singular vision and they are sticking with it. So I don't know. I loved that. Again, I was nervous about, like, oh, is this going to be awkward? Is it going to feel weird? But it feels unmistakably Twin Peaks to me. And it also feels unmistakably David Lynch. It's amazing. It's just incredible that we get to basically sit through an 18-hour David Lynch movie over the next month or so.
Yeah.
And that's very exciting. And it's exciting because, again, like I said, in the pre-show, I was saying, nobody makes a movie like Lynch. And it's true. And that still holds up. There are still things in the show that I've never seen before that I didn't want to see. That is very exciting to me that even in this oversaturated landscape of television, David Lynch, who kind of pioneered the way, can come back and create something so singular and so unique. And I am extremely excited to see where it goes. What are you hoping for as we move forward with the show?
I can legitimately say that I don't have any hopes for the storyline, which, of course, you can isolate that one and take it out of context. But I don't have any. I'm dead serious. I'll repeat it. All I care about is tone.
Yeah.
And it's got the right tone, and I'm happy with that. Yeah. I don't care. This is one of those rare things where it's a TV show where I don't care where the story goes because I can tell that I'm just going to enjoy getting there.
Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you. Yeah, I agree. It's like I'm excited because it feels like we're in capable hands, and I'm excited to see where it goes. And I really like you know, there's a part of me that fears them getting a little too caught up in their own eccentricities. Is that the right word? Like getting a little too caught up in that. But at the same time, I don't care. I'm kind of like even if it gets a little out there to the point where it's like, wait a second, what's happening? I am okay with that. And I love the extreme reactions on either side. The show's getting relatively positive reactions. A lot of people really liked it, but at the same time, there are people who just hate it, which I think is great.
I can guarantee you that one of the founding members and co-host of Nerd Nuptial here on the Nerd Party, Tristan Riddell, is listening to this show and us gushing over Lynch and is planning to go on killing one or both of us.
I probably. So, and maybe we deserve
All I would ask is that I get the R under my fingernail and you get the T and then everybody else fills us out.
That sounds good to me. I think I can live with that, even though I won't be living with that. But all right.
We'll just be trapped in the Black Lodge for 25 years.
So how many...
sycamore trees. How many sycamore trees?
Yeah, how many evolutions of the arm do we give? Do we give Fire Walk With Me? And then how many evolutions of the arm do we give the first 2 hours of Twin Peaks Season 3?
I am an absolute heretic among Twin Peaks fans. 4 out of 5 evolutions of the arm to Fire Walk With Me.
Okay.
And the first 2 hours, fine. Hate me if you want to. I give it a 5 out of 5.
This is going to be extremely boring. I agree with you on both of those. I would give 4 out of 5 to Fire Walk With Me. It's a movie, again, I will only rewatch it if I go back and watch the whole thing and want to get the whole experience again, because it is not a pleasant movie to watch, but it is an effective movie. And it has a lot of really beautiful moments in it. And then so far, the revival has just been wonderful. And I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm completely on board, and it's very it's exhilarating to think that this is happening and that it's on track.
Dare I say, it is happening again.
Yes, you dare.
Just waiting this whole show to do that one.
Yes. So that's pretty much it. So we want to hear from you about Twin Peaks. This is huge. Like, are you feeling the show is living up to your expectations? Did you agree that Fire Walk With Me deserves another shot, or do you still think it's terrible? We want to hear from you. I'm at Yay Chandraman on Twitter. John, where can people reach you?
You can find me on Kessel Junkie, and you can also find me here on the network on Aggressive Negotiations with Matt Rushing, which is a Star Wars podcast. You can hear me on Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler, where we look at the work of Star Wars creators. And we're actually very soon going to be looking at Dune, because we'll be looking at the works of creators who weren't chosen to work on Star Wars and what they came up with as their next project after that moment.
Perfect. And yeah, as we all know, Dune was the one that's paved the way for science fiction.
It was the Star Wars
21st
killer.
Century.
Yeah. And then I'm also on Stage 9 with Mike Schindler over on the Trek FM network, where it's what I said about Star Wars creators, but for Star Trek.
There we go. All these shows are great, and I highly recommend checking them out. I highly recommend following at Join Nerd Party. And just tell us what you think. I'm excited. If you hated Twin Peaks, I want to hear about it, because for some reason it makes me enjoy it all the more.
Tag both of us.
Tag both of us. Let's do it. Let's have this conversation. And I just want to add, I think there's something funny to be said about this, but the fact that Tarantino hates Firewalk with Me makes me love it even more. I don't know why, and I love Tarantino, but just the fact that he is like, how dare David Lynch? He's so pompous. And I was like, really? Are you one to be talking
I saw
about
Kill Bill Part 1, you jerk. Don't you dare talk about pretentious or pompous.
But there you go. All right. So, John, thank you so much for being here. A pleasure to discuss Twin Peaks, and I hope we continue to enjoy the ride. And ladies and gentlemen, we hope that you have enjoyed this ride, and we will see you on the flip side. Take care.